football on off the ball.
Yeah, I think we needed a big statement home win like that, and I think it was convincing to go. It's never happened in my whole career that I've conceded after 8 seconds. I can't believe we conceded after 8 seconds.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Man United flying, yeah, that's the lead.
Monday, always one day. The lead. Tuesday, 2 day.
Always the lead.
Wednesday, what day?
Is Ronnie O'Sullivan not the lead this morning?
Ronnie O'Sullivan flying, booked the flight yesterday morning because he was so far behind to Dublin. Of course, he lives in Dublin, partially.
Well, he lives in Longford, I think.
Partially.
Somewhere in Ireland, anyway.
One of those Daniel Day-Lewis bits where...
Lives?
Is it Dundalk?
He's Lives, isn't he?
I don't know. But Daniel Day-Lewis, he lives in Wicklow, doesn't he? The Garden of Ireland. But I don't know where. Who knows where? He's only up the road.
Did you see the
one
Kemps?
Of the one of the greatest actors of all times is up the road from us. I don't know where though.
The Kemps are doing a tour of Ireland. Apparently at the peak of Spandau Ballet, they were living in Ireland.
Oh, really?
A Charlie Haughey tax break really helped with
the Kemps
little,
living in Ireland.
A little sprinkling of stardust.
Do they have...
Lisa Stanfield? Is she?
Oh, yeah.
Stanfield?
Maybe, yeah. Do they have Irish lineage, the Kemps?
I don't know. Maybe they do. Maybe I'm doing them a disservice.
Because I have a couple of, the Kemps... Like nothing to do with Ireland, as southern as you could get. Like,
yeah,
they're like the refuge of the place, particularly at that time, Ger. It was a tempestuous time, and Spandau Ballet were in their pomp. So were the Troubles.
Yeah, the Troubles were obviously very localized to the north.
Yes, but it's the vibe in.
Well, the vibe in Dublin was different, but. and Cork.
It was, yeah. So far away from it, but
yeah.
Still part of it, I suppose.
Yeah. Abandoned.
In some way.
And I'll stand that idly by. You will stand idly by. You did. Go on.
Which I was a child. Which, you know, when reading in the ears, actually, do you know when the screen fades to black, you know where it's going next? Like,
the bomb had a bomb, has just gone off.
Up the north.
Music stops.
Yeah, music stops.
Yeah. A haunting single voice comes out.
They didn't they? In the north, in the mid-90s, and it was like a lot of kids playing in a creche. And basically, the vibe was, Northern Ireland, we're not that bad. It was, that's what they were selling. Like, come up to us. You'll be grand.
I'm telling you, Belfast is buzzing. They've been up 3 times in the last 3 months and had an amazing time.
Nowadays, absolutely forget about
city,
it.
Yeah.
What's in Belfast theater? They have a Celtic shop, and they have a Ranger shop around the corner from it. There's no problem.
Well, you say there's no problem.
There's no problem there. Well, what kind of problems do you think that would...
There's still a deeply sectarian society which is divided upon sectarian lines, and there's loads of issues. But anyway, let's not get into the nuances. It's a great city to walk around and have food.
It's getting better. We didn't think it was going to go here, did we? And that's the beauty of this. How about United, though? Do you want some numbers behind it?
Yeah, okay. Man United are a bigger story than Ronnie O'Sullivan this morning as he crashes out in his bid for eight.
Which is natural.
Routine 2-1 win against a Brentford side who beat them in the XG. But yeah, okay, no, come on.
I didn't know you wanted to talk about Ronnie O'Sullivan.
Exciting life of Old Trafford.
There was no indication you wanted to talk about Ronnie O'Sullivan this morning. But here we are now.
Come on, go for it.
No, go take your Ronnie lap.
No.
What do you have to say? What do you have to say about it? It was a shocking defeat.
I've been outvoted here by Man United fans.
I literally have not.
Next year, wait. Oh, these group stages are amazing. Wow,
as any good
so
producer, like Dara will go where the wind's
so
blowing.
So many places that we haven't been before.
Yeah, Dara will have the topic first, you know. So he was happy to go, Ronnie.
Check out the solipsism there.
What do you want to?
I want to hear about Ronnie. What do you have to say about Ronnie? Let's go.
No, it's.
He was in this very studio, of course, friend of ours. He went above and beyond the usual guest studio and actually played a bit of pool.
Yeah.
Right? Like the tiny bit between the camera and us here is where he played, roughly speaking.
Yeah.
Or actually where the camera is.
He was pretty good at that, it turned out. The tiny little table, he was still, you'd say, world class. Better than anybody you've ever seen at that.
I heard a quote from yesterday saying that he feels like he's been playing rubbish for the best part of 3 years.
Well, he had the yips.
Yeah. It's amazing that Ronnie O'Sullivan...
He had the yips and got it back.
Gets his yips.
And then was absolutely annihilating John Higgins. John Higgins said he felt like when they came out, he was kind of shocked by the response that they got at the very start and played like a startled earwig, to coin Paco Roy's phrase. But rabbit in the headlights is what he actually said. And at a 5-frame deficit, and it looked like Ronnie was cruising and Ronnie was back, and then Ronnie collapsed and lost 6 in a row.
Yeah.
And actually gave up the final frame when it was still in the melting pot. Just walked away and was like, walked out and was like, no, I can't do it. I just think it's heartbreaking that this is going to be the end of Ronnie, where he feels all this pressure and stress and tension, as opposed to, you know, the warm, cuddly embrace of one of those golfers who tees off early in the Masters or the Open, and like Freddie Couples, who goes back and shoots two birdies in the front nine. And it was, oh, Freddie's going to be first day leader. And it's like, can't do that anymore. But he can still have a couple of early birdies and make everybody excited. With Ronnie, it's like the torment and stress and pressure of every single missed shot for the last 40 years is etched inside his brain. We can't see it because he looks amazing. Obviously, whatever that lifestyle is, that the no booze and all the running is really working for him. But I don't know. Steve Peters obviously has his work cut out, or whoever he's seeing these days. And I don't think the snooker's class, this week of the snooker, is brilliant. So anyway, let's talk about Man United, because we don't do that enough on the show.
Yeah. Decent result for Man United.
Pretty good.
Yeah. What have you got to say about it?
Pretty good.
You had some numbers for us, did you?
I did, yeah. Do you want your numbers, do you?
You're not excited anymore.
Do you want your numbers?
They're your numbers. Go on, yeah.
Not mine. They're never mine. 9 Premier League wins and 13 Premier League games for Carrick. That's 29 points and 39, Gerrard. What's interesting, last night, they had their preferred formation, and then at halftime they switched it up. Mesrawi came on for Ahmad. And then they went for a Ruben Amorim style to shut up shop. That's the point about this Michael Carrick thing, right? If you look at their performances, United are actually a bit of an afterthought this season, I think. Especially this time of the season.
Yeah.
They barely play, really, grand scheme of things, in terms of all this bombardment of live sport. Not even a thought yesterday, for example, when we're going through everything. Last game was 9 days prior. Before that, it was 24 days prior. A lot of time off here, these United lads. They're not playing that well. They haven't actually played that well since the first two Carrick games, which was Arsenal and Man City.
So would you give them the
job done?
That's the question,
plenty
really
of times, and Alex Ferguson, would go back there, where they had a game just like this, didn't play that well, and they won.
Yeah.
Just like this. But would I give them the job? No, I don't think I would. It depends who the alternative is, though. It depends who they actually get. I mean, if I think there are like maybe a handful of managers that's realistic enough for United to get, who I think I'd have over Carrick. But I just think there's a few things there. What I just said as well is, like, they're now going to go back to playing twice a week next season. We know that, in some form. And some European guys are going
to
be playing.
And definitely Champions League at this stage. It's impossible for them not to agree.
So they're 11 points clear of Brighton, and the significance of Brighton is that Brighton are sixth outside the Champions League place. They have 4 games to go. Their next game is at Anfield at the weekend.
Even if they lost those 4, you can't see anybody picking up.
It would be a collapse of almighty proportions.
And even then, Arsenal, more than likely.
So they'll get Champions League. So they're back to playing every 3 days or so. And he hasn't experienced that. And the only job he's had in football is Middlesbrough. So you just don't know how he's going to do at this level. It suits him now. It's a nice job to have at the moment, I would say. He's doing very well for himself. And he sets himself up for another job. But I would say if there's a more renowned manager out there, I would take them. There's actually loads of work to do with this squad. Like, you know, one of United's best players, one of their biggest goal threats of the season, is leaving.
Yep.
Their midfielder, that's his 9th Premier League goal last night, Casemiro. 6 of them are headers. And he's gone. I would say that their defence needs a serious upgrade. I think Diogo Dalot is a perfectly fine right back. I think if he was to leave this summer and stay in the Premier League, he'd probably find himself in the lower half of the league. I think Luke Shaw has been there an awfully long time. He's not going to get any better. He's fine. He also can't trust him fitness-wise. He's a fine player. Decent player.
Grant.
Yeah, exactly. Grant. And I think that's fair enough. I'd say he can be very good in his day. And then centre-half, Harry Maguire, look, a resurgence for sure. And then Lisandro Martinez, if he can stay fit. Matthijs de Ligt, I don't know if you're going to see him again.
Yeah.
You could do an upgrade there for sure. Midfield, you're going to need to replace Casemiro. And up front, so you have 3 from 4 in Ahmad, Cunha, Mbeumo, Sesko. All very good. Will they win the Premier League or the Champions League? Probably not. But it's very good. There's a lot of good to very good players there. But they could do with a serious upgrade, and they actually do need to work in the defence, and they do need a Casemiro replacement.
Yeah,
there's actually a lot of work to do.
Well, yeah, okay. So there's like a couple of fullbacks and a couple of central midfielders that you have.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say that flippantly as that. I think that's a big, big area of the pitch.
Well,
big area of the pitch
they have
right.
A lot of money. They spent 200 million last year. They spent 200 million this year. you know, you'll get one of those midfielders who's on offer at the minute. It looks like Elliot Anderson is Man City's favourite. And then after that, you can sign Adam Wharton and wait a year to get a Casemiro replacement, or you can sign Adam Wharton and a Casemiro replacement, and then you've got four good 10, 6, 8s. Like, Kobbie Mainoo played very well last night.
Yeah, he was brilliant.
And
that run he went on, started the game.
Oh,
that's the skillful nature of him, you know.
Oh, I am mad, got subbed off for missing that.
He has to score that.
He's had a season that's symbolic of the club, Kobbie Mainoo. It's like
Phoenix from the Flames.
Manchester United split season this season.
I think, like, suddenly they're attractive as well for players in terms of recruitment. Like, last season or the season before, not the most appealing place to find yourself at. But now that they're winning games again, third in the league, you kind of fancy them to stay there as well. Champions League football next season, it's a pretty attractive prospect to play for Man United again, which, you know, goes a long way in the transfer market.
Should the Premier League be ashamed of itself that this is the best of the rest, this lot, who everyone was laughing at as recently as New Year's Day?
They've got lucky, you would say, with the quality of opposition they face. Chelsea have imploded, Spurs have imploded, Newcastle's money has dried up and they've imploded.
Yeah.
Villa are where they should be, really, and maybe slightly ahead of where they should be, given that they've no strikers. And then after that, who's the competition? The top two teams are clear. Yeah,
well, Liverpool have been
over the horizon.
Well.
Sorry, Liverpool as well, obviously, have had a unique season.
But Villa, you know, Villa should be doing better than United.
They shouldn't. They've spent less than all those teams have spent less than Man United have on accumulating their squad. And
the spending, we know the spending thing is
has been the single greatest factor defining final position.
You can waste your money.
You can, but historically,
you can overpay for a player.
Historically, the money that gets spent dictates average finishing position more accurately than any other aspect of life.
What's the difference between the spend by United, Chelsea, Villa, Liverpool?
The net spend is massive difference.
The amount that Liverpool spent in the summer.
But this like, over the last decade, it's supposed to... Look, Man United should be finishing ahead of everybody. Basically, they're the biggest club in England. They've got the biggest support base.
Well, that's
got the biggest
them as an establishment, but look at their squad.
Yeah, so they're just regressing to the mean now by finishing where they are. And we could get sucked into that debate if you want, but I do... I think he's done enough to get the job, barring a better replacement. But I think that they're going to be conservative in finding a replacement who might actually be better, but you don't know if he's better or not. Like, Xabi Alonso might be better, right? But I think the fact that he wanted to play a very specific style of football and tried to enforce that at Real Madrid and that failed will rule him out. It might not be the right thing to rule him out. They should go and talk to him and say, what would you do differently? What have you learned from that? Raiola might be perfect for this gig, but they might think we've just had a slightly inexperienced manager come and not be prepared for what life is like here. And maybe the fact that Carrick was a player there so long ago, maybe the fact that he was on the staff there much more recently, and maybe the fact that he's had this time, you know, it is a much different pressure next season. To your point about playing the two games is different. But actually, the scrutiny he gets now is less because he's interim and it's a qualified position, as opposed to when he's the full, you're the guy and you're the guy for the next 4 years. Everything is up for grabs.
Yeah, I just think it's so difficult to tell what he'll be like.
Yeah.
What's happening now is not what's going to happen next season.
Has he earned the right?
I think he's done as well
next season.
I think he's done extremely well in his position. When he got the job in January, when Amrim left, I think there was widespread underwhelm.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, not this again. So he's done, I think he's probably done better than people expected, particularly his first two games.
Yeah.
Two of the hardest games he had. And I incorrectly said they're going to Anfield this week. They've already done Anfield this year, of course. So that's what I mean. They do these weird games. So it's Old Trafford, Liverpool this weekend. Then they go to Sunderland. Then they're at home to Nottingham Forest. And then they're away to Brighton to finish up.
It's not a bad running, yeah.
Not a bad running. And they don't need to do very much for it. And again, they have this time off between games. Like, so it's just a weird place for United. They're a bit of an afterthought in the league for the first time in a long time, where the first half of this season, it's probably the club we talked about most on the show, not just in football. And now they've been relegated to the side because you just see them rarely. It's kind of the same team. There's the fitness element to it. And he's doing perfectly fine. They're not actually playing that well and they need a big upgrade in the squad. Brentford had their chances, really had their chances yesterday. Yeah. Keith Andrews' side, you can lament that as well. Like Igor Thiago could have had a first half hat-trick, but he didn't even get a shot away in those three chances.
Yeah,
they hit the post in the second half as well, Brentford. Great goal back, actually, the half the deficit.
Lovely finish, yeah.
And Mikael Damsgaard had a header, actually, after that, which went straight at the keeper. There could have been a draw on another day. You could argue it was fair enough if it was a draw. But they're getting over the line. He set himself up. It's a great time to be Michael Carrick, either way.
Yeah, is there no way, right? So at the start, when he took over, was there no way he could earn the rights next season? Because he's probably done as well as he could have in the league, at least.
I think like, it's more likely than not that he'll get the gig.
Yeah, I think he will as well.
If they can't find anyone.
I think they might just give it to him. Yeah, I don't even know if they'll particularly go and recruit anyone or...
Yeah.
Regardless of any of that, I actually think they'd just give it to him. And maybe they have someone in mind on standby. Maybe he doesn't start the season well and they're like, okay, we thought we'd give you the gig. You're not going that well. So, you know, we'll bring you back next time for the interim gig again.
I just see the way this will go. You know, if they do that and they get rid of him in November because it's disastrous, then you're going back to, you know, they made the same mistake as they did with Solskjaer. Solskjaer was doing really well as an interim. Then they gave him the job full time. And Solskjaer had decent spells. Did get the Europa League final, of course. He lost the penalties. But generally speaking, it ended poorly.
Yeah.
/ disastrously. And the fear when this appointment was made earlier this year was, oh, this is Solskjaer over again. He can't do this. And if they fall into that trap, they get flirted with, they get seduced by Carrick's form as an interim. They give him the full-time gig again.
Yeah, it could go the other way. You give someone the full-time gig and it ends up like, well, for Nancy at Celtic, and you're like, oof, we should have just kept... Are Martin O'Neill on?
We're
know?
In this era of managers being promoted, and it's not a linear progression like you had. Yeah. Look, say what you want about how it went for Liam Rossini, but he goes Strasbourg, Chelsea. Carrick on paper goes Middlesbrough in the Championship, Man United.
Yeah, the Strasbourg wasn't, it turns out, enough experience for that big job. And look, there is experience now from this period and the previous short period and the period under Solskjaer that Carrick has, which actually is as good as it's going to be for him in terms of getting experience. Like, I don't know, would he get the Spurs job this summer? If say Spurs go down and De Zerbi leaves, right? We were told De Zerbi's staying, that even if they go down, he's staying, and he signed a long-term deal, and it's irrespective of whether or not. But maybe it isn't.
He could get, look, he comes from the Northeast, so he'd get the Newcastle gig if Eddie Howe does go. It's been a poor season for Newcastle. If they switch up, he'll have options in the Premier League, I'd say. I don't know. My instinct is saying, don't give it to him.
And can I? The obvious next question is: well, who would you be like? That's better. I know it's not your job to do that, but
yeah. But as a fan, who would you?
I like the guy who's ruled himself out already, which is Luis Enrique.
Did he officially rule himself out?
I think he signed a new deal last week with PSG.
Yeah, reportedly, I think. Yeah.
I think.
So Michael Carrick is evens.
Yeah.
And Andone Iraola is 8-1. Nagelsmann's 10-1. Oliver Glasner's 12. Unai 18. Southgate 20. Luis Enrique 20. Pochettino 25.
I love Pochettino.
Marcus Silva 25.
Oh, is Marcus Silva you wanted for the Chelsea gig last week? Said that.
Enzo Maresca, 25.
Yeah. It's not that obvious, though. I love Pochettino. I would love to see that happen. But he's probably seen as yesterday's man by a lot of people. But I would like to see it, actually.
Still now, is that just because you were on that horse a couple of years ago? You're like, yeah, I will be proven right eventually.
I want to see if he has one last shot in him, you know?
You're playing the long game here.
Well, Chelsea was a poor... You know, you play Paris Saint-Germain and Chelsea, like, the tough jobs to take, really, in terms of keeping them.
The one other thing you'd say is that it's not going particularly well for America at the moment.
America, yeah.
But, you know, a disaster.
I don't know. If it was going really well for America and Pochettino, would you say anything different either?
Well, just that like, he would have sloughed off the stink of the previous jobs that failed. You know, walks away with fatigue from a club that is less busy and difficult to manage than Man United.
Yeah. What can I say? Like, I liked the guy. I liked what he did at the time at Spurs, you know. And I was like, I would like this guy to manage a team that I support. I like the team that he built there. I'd like him to do that one more time.
Can I give you like a stupid hypothetical?
Mm-hmm.
Would you take Keith Andrews now? Not in 4 or 5 years' time, but now.
No. I'd leave Keith at Brentford for a couple of years.
Is that because you want the best for Keith?
Or yes,
you want,
yeah. I'm thinking of Keith here. No, he's had a very good first season. Let's see what happens in the second year.
Yeah, totally, yeah. I just mean in terms of quality, like, is he at that level yet? It is hard to know because he's come through Brentford.
I don't know.
As a coach.
I mean, like, our club's going to be burnt by the Brentford manager situation now. Well, I don't know.
That seems unfair.
It does seem very unfair on Keith Andrews. Nothing to do with Keith Andrews, of course.
He obviously signed a new improved deal during the summer, during the season, which the London Independent or whatever that newspaper is called now, it's not the London Independent, the I, they were writing about it this morning, saying that in that there are clauses that protect them from him being stolen, and that they're delighted with how things are gone. The first thing you think about, which is pretty basic, is can we get on with this person? When they were appointing him an insider, Brentford said the staff liked him, the players liked him, the owner liked him, and that's a really good start. Now they also have their own alternative data, which is showing where they should or shouldn't be. Their suite of bespoke data and analytics provide a more rounded picture of performances in the league table. So, you know, the league table never lies except when it does. And the message is they're more than capable of competing. The alternative table suggests Newcastle should be better off, while the likes of Aston Villa are overperforming a bit, but there is very, very little in it, and Brentford could sneak into Europe, although obviously in real life as opposed to on their fantasy table. So, I think that it doesn't feel like Manchester United are at the bleeding edge of data and analysis.
They're not, honestly, they're not playing that well.
And so,
It's not that impressive, but the results are good.
Yeah, you were comparing it with Ferguson there.
I was just saying there was many times that Ferguson had games like that. Many times.
Yeah, but...
You get the job done. Like, it's one of this goes back to your thing last week about... what was about results as well that you wanted to bring up?
Scoreboard journalism.
Scoreboard journalism. So if you're not watching United at the moment, you're just looking, you check in on them. It's like, well, they had that weird Leeds defeat. Their Monday night record at Old Trafford, you see this, is appalling. You have to go back to like August 2023 for the last time they won on a Monday night Old Trafford Premier League, but it's only happened four times, is the other stat. But they had lost three and drawn one of the previous ones. They finally did it last night. They lose that weird game to Leeds, then they win at Chelsea. But they're kind of, that's a really inconsistent run of form there. But I forget you have plenty of these games, but the thing with Carrick is he's starting off, so you kind of want him to prove something else.
Yeah.
He's really not playing that well. But I suppose he has the ability to be flexible. That's what the problem with Ruben Amorim was, wasn't it? He was rigid to that system and whatever, and that was the obsession with the talk. Carrick is more of the Ferguson-like throwback in that it's whatever about the system. You switch it around,
play
whatever fits
front
the occasion, and he got the job done. So there are good characteristics that Carrick has, for sure. But if you watch the games themselves, like, they concede a huge amount of chances, a lot. So Brentford took their chances yesterday. But they didn't. And up steps Bruno Fernandes in the conversation. This man now, 19 Premier League assists. He's one off the Premier League record, the joint record shared by Kevin De Bruyne and Thierry Henry. Thierry Henry, like, when he's scoring all around him, 2002-03 season, also managed to notch 20 assists for himself. I enjoyed his assist last night because he had the option of the angel and the devil. Apply where applicable. Brian Mbeumo to his right. Benjamin Sesko to his left. I actually didn't think it was great. Past Sesko.
No,
I think he
had
to give Sesko a fair bit to do. And he destroyed the Irish boys. Went inside Nathan Collins, smashed a pass, Queeveen Kelleher. And then do you see in the second half when Bruno had a chance to shoot? And old Bruno will take any opportunity that you give him to shoot. And he literally turned his back, turned around and passed it off to Casemiro, who was 5 yards deeper for him to have a shot,
I think that's probably good for his game as well, because you often see with him when he does miss a shot, he gets very frustrated in that moment. I feel like sometimes that takes him out of his game a wee bit, but if he just focuses on what he's best at in playmaking, 19 assists a season, he'll probably match, if not break, that record now. It's likely he'll get an assist in the next three, four games.
This is the most loved Bruno's been since his first 6 months at the club. He came in January 2020 and he was a shining light at a crisis point, right? He was brilliant. His goals and assists. And then he spent a couple of years where, like, a lot of people hated him. Hated the wild gesticulation. He was getting criticised left and right. And now he's stayed long enough to become a hero again.
Would you hope, though, that next season somebody else comes in and is captain and there's a, you know, slightly different... The tactically anarchic thing seems to have disappeared as well.
Oh, about Bruno?
Mm.
Yeah. Well, I think he was usually forgiven for that when he was scoring or assisting. He's weird when he's been... It's Frank Lampard-esque in that when you talk about Bruno Fernandes as a midfielder, you talk about numbers. It is like statistics about, like, goals scored and goals created. But if you look at his actual all-round midfield play, like, it's okay. It's decent. But he's just such a threat, like.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. It's something like, do you ever watch Bruno Fernandes when he's having a bad game? That, like, that's when he's conceding possession in really dangerous areas. Yeah. But the thing is, he has more good than bad. You talk about the good. Also, can I just talk about the player of the year conversation?
Yeah.
Sorry, just one more. Bernardo Silva, what is this about phenomenon in football, right? The Bernardo Silva, I would say, would you agree with me? That suddenly now he's a contender for player of the year.
Yeah, yeah.
No, nobody was talking about this guy a month ago.
He wasn't particularly having a great season. That was the thing, that he's kind of fallen off the last, you know, season or two.
Club legend. Another creation of Silva, club legend.
For sure,
City.
Yeah.
9 years at the club. Release a statement, leave it. What a player you are. Coincides then with City upturn in form. And he has a handy game or two. And now he's up for player of the year. Like, was anyone talking about Bernardo Silva in February?
No. He's played a big role in the turn of form. Like that, there's no doubt about that. But he was not having a great season. I think it's just they're trying to find which City player is, you know, deserves it the most, or who's the leading factor in the turn of form. It's probably Haaland. I think Haaland will probably win it. I don't think he should.
I think if they win at the moment, it depends on what Bruno does over the next four games. I think that's going to have a significant impact.
If Arsenal win the league, they'll give it to an Arsenal player.
Well, if City win the league, they won't.
Yeah,
there's no way Declan Rice is winning if City win.
It's all continue. And then Bernardo Silva would definitely get player of the year if City win the league.
Do you think?
100% they'll give it to him, because they'll be like, Erling, you'll be here next year. We'll give it to you then.
I think that Bruno gets it in that circumstance. Bruno's favourite at the
moment. No, if City win the league, they give it to Bruno Fernandes.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance.
City are favourite at the moment, right? City are favourites to win the league at the moment, right?
Yeah.
And if your logic is correct, then by that logic, Haaland and Silva would be the shortest prices. But Bruno Fernandes is the shortest price at the moment. That's what the bookmakers think is going to happen. They think City's going to win the league, and they think Bruno's going to get it. Because remember, we had Henry, were you here when Henry Winter was on? Saying that the City players, the last time when we were talking specifically about this, the City players will split the vote.
Yeah.
You're too busy typing there to take any of this.
They won't focus
on just Haaland and put all the votes towards Haaland.
Yeah, the last player to win the player of the year that didn't win the league that year.
If Bruno breaks the assist record, I think he probably wins it.
Will I give you
the life rewarding history?
Do you have an answer to that?
No, not yet.
I
got distracted by it.
After Ginola, there was
I think more recent than that, but that was mad, wasn't it? Ginola won it in 99. That was mental. Gareth Bale would have won it for sure.
Yeah.
And there's no way Spurs getting in with an acid orb in the Premier League then.
Casemiro, Brazilian and Ben land smackers in race for Champions League is the headline in The Sun. Bruno, help us. Bruno Guimarães says Newcastle need help from their Saudi owners after a horror run. They want money. Ronnie dumped out by Higgins, picture of Ronnie O'Sullivan, and Fury versus AJ is on. The fight was made. We don't know any details of it really, except that it's going to be in the winter time. There will be a warm-up fight for Anthony Joshua against some nomark, and then that will be in after that. The two of them will fight. It's going to be on Netflix, so free for those of you who have Netflix. And I don't think it's going to be in Croker, but sure, look. Blues Eye Xabi, Liverpool legend Alonso on Chelsea three-man list. The other two are Andoni Iraola and Marco Silva.
Who suits the Chelsea job?
All those three could be good at it.
Xabi, Alonso, I would like Xabi, buddy, stay away.
Yeah.
Stay out of the game. Get your Leverkusen rep back, not your Madrid one.
Yeah, I feel like he can't have two bad tenures in a row in modern football as a manager. I think you have to bounce back from a high profile sacking.
Yeah, he belongs in the elite, right? He was an elite player. And he started as an elite manager. He's where he belongs, right?
Yeah.
I could see Andoni Iraola take it, because I think if it goes badly, I could see Iraola bouncing back. Going back to Spain, getting a decent job and coming back, and was like, Andoni, you're just the latest one. Now, that's different expectations for two different managers there. But I think Xabi Alonso, you want to be careful about his next job, wouldn't he?
Yes, he would, but at the same time, maybe you don't get an opportunity. And also, at some point, like that squad, they'll add a couple of experienced players. There's three players you could add to that squad and you'd be like, oh, that's a really good team.
That's how Chelsea get you. That's how they lure you in.
Yeah, but
you can win a Champions League.
Someone's going to be good.
And you can still be a chump in their modern history.
Well, so Maresca fell out with them because of the medical staff, which seems weird in retrospect. It was like, just calm down,
just fit,
Enzo.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if the player's not fit, you're going to need him for the title run in.
It's about control, isn't it?
Yeah, but so Xabi Alonso has just been at Real Madrid where he had no control.
Well, he tried to coach the players, which I think was the big problem.
Well, long video meetings.
Thomas Tuchel wins Champions League 6 months into his tenure. And what's his legacy at Chelsea? Falls out with them. Gets sacked.
Yeah.
Is he a legend in the eyes of Chelsea?
He has the England
fans?
Job now, so.
I'd say he is.
Do you think he is?
I'd say if you're.
Do you think Roberto Di Matteo is a legend?
Yeah.
As a manager?
Yeah, I think.
I was as a player, but.
I think if you win a Champions League, the fans. I don't know that the Chelsea fans sing Thomas Tuchel's name. I mean, I'd say they do.
I don't know.
Spurs confirmed Simmons will miss rest of season and World Cup. He did his ACL around about the same time that the news of Xabi Simmons' ACL was coming through. News coming through from Cork that Kieran Joyce is gone as well. And that's the headline on Patrick Horgan's column in the back of the Examiner this morning. The injuries to Kieran Joyce and Rob Downey cast a shadow after Cork's win on Sunday. There's no point in saying otherwise. Cork will get on with the show despite injury setbacks. Now, Rob Downey's injury, he'll be back for an All-Ireland semi-final at least, and potentially, if they're in a quarter-final, he'll be available for that. And I think he's had ankle injuries before, so he knows what the drill is with recovery from this. So while it's serious, it's actually, the worst-case scenario is not a total disaster. Kieran Joyce was obviously playing great at fullback, and it solved an issue for them. But I do wonder, is there an Owen Downey story arc developing here where they put him back to fullback and suddenly it's like all the demons and ghosts from 2025 are exorcised?
Yeah, well, it's in front of them now, isn't it? Like they're in a good position despite the injuries, but I think they're starting to find players' best positions, like Dara Fitz up in the wing half forward as well. Like they're starting to figure it out under Ben O'Connor, but like you're keeping quiet over there. You don't want to get ahead of yourself though at the same time.
No, I'm just enjoying it for what it is, you know.
Yeah,
the Dara Fitzgibbon said they had a big session there Sunday night to enjoy it. It's going very well. This is the best start Cork have made in this round robin format, and look they did alright for 65 minutes plus without Joyce, but to start the game with them mentally is different.
Yeah,
you lose
about
5 minutes, you adapt in-game. If you have preparation time for losing him in advance, it's a different story. Now, the good thing about this is, like, up next is Waterford. On paper, they can afford to lose that game. They're not going to want to lose that game. They shouldn't lose that match, but they can. Just buys it a little bit more time, but ACL is awful. Like, you're talking months down the line. So it's a huge loss. That's a time will tell one. Like, this is a Kieran Joyce converted to that position where he got injured in.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, he was doing well, but it's not like... It's not like it was over. Maybe it was over. Maybe that was exactly it, and he's going to end up playing out the rest of his career in that position and being an absolute superstar in it. But the fact that they were able to solve it once.
I don't think it's a worthy excuse if Cork lose another All-Ireland final and you go back to this time of year that they lost Kieran Joyce 5 minutes into their second game in Munster. I don't think that's a sufficient reason to not achieve All-Ireland final success.
I did have a Cork buddy text me yesterday saying Cork can't win All Ireland without Kieran Joyce. Was that the official Cork mafia line?
No. I'm like in many things, the Cork would be split on it. Like, you know,
who's the stickies in this situation?
I think you can adapt, you know, because it's I fully expect Limerick to adapt without Lynch and Galan. You know, I think they struggled without Galan at the weekend without a goal threat. But Limerick were in that game to the last puck of the game, like, and that was without their star forward. They were without their captain. I still expect Limerick to adapt and overcome. Now, this is a crucial defender you're talking about for Cork. Do you replace him in the aggregate and take turns man-marking star opposition? Yeah. But I think there is a way around that. I'm not totally panicking yet. And maybe that's not the vibe of another victory. And a win against Limerick.
Clare favourites for that game, according to this weekend. And I think that's about right.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose it's a kind of who would you rather be, which is a regular question at this point in Munster, is Limerick one game, one defeat, it was close. Clare one game, then a week off, and then back again. Who's sharper?
Yeah.
I've lost you, have I?
Who's sharper? It's...
you're reading.
I think they're... I'm looking for the odds there. Clare, Limerick.
Luis Suarez.
And I'm sorry, Limerick are favourites. Those popped up wrong. Clare 6-4 to win a game at home. Limerick, because of their greater need, I suspect, is what they're agreeing with you.
Yeah.
Who would you rather be? The team who needs it the most?
Yeah, I think so. Are we kind of... The team we're not talking about is Clare at the moment.
I back Clare at the start of the year. I think that... I hear Limerick are, it's their last dance. Half the team are going to be in their 30s, turning into their 30s this year. I'm like, that's not last dance. Last dance is 35, 36. Last dance is like a lad who's leaving to go and try and get space.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of intercounty. What's the like average age of intercounty high-profile retirement?
Sure.
31,
sure.
I'd say.
For sure. It's a fair point. Maybe they've all decided collectively that I've got to wait until the league final is played next September,
yeah,
the week of the Ryder Cup, and then go and walk inside the ropes and be like, we're finished.
This topic, though, of ultra commitment level, I was speaking with a former Wicklow senior footballer at the weekend, and he's still in great shape and all that, and he's gone a few years from them, like, and I was like, is it really as bad as we're all saying, like, the commitment levels? And he was like, it's unbelievable what you have to do to stay in contention. And particularly with a county where you're not necessarily competing for the highest honours in the game. Probably, yeah, even harder, because you still have to stay just as sharp as the big boys when it comes to like Liam McCarthy and Sam Maguire contention. So you said to be just as committed, but fewer people are looking at you. It's unbelievable. He said it's getting to that level now. He's like, I don't actually know where it's going to go next.
Well, so talking to the people who are at that level, it's a lifestyle choice. And that filters out those who want to do it and those who can't.
Yeah, but it's funny how it's got to this level, you know, of... I said it before, like, even their physique now compared to their peers from a quarter of a century ago, they just look so much different. They look like professional athletes. Like, if you were to bring someone from abroad who hasn't seen the game before and you showed them the game, it was like, well, this is incredible, a very high level of skill. It's remarkable. This is kind of like watching hurling for the first time is an incredible experience, particularly if that first time is as an adult. What the hell is this?
Yeah.
And then you say what it is and you explain, like, all these people have jobs. They go back to that. Like, how? They look, everything looks professional here.
Yeah.
So I wonder how did we get to that level of it where
it's an arms
obviously
race.
It's always been like incredibly competitive throughout the years. If you look at them back in the day compared to now, physically they look totally different. The game is much faster as well. So I don't know is there another level again to go? Feels like we're at the peak of conditioning.
The teams who make the work-life balance more in favour of being able to rest. You know, some of the richer counties will find ways for their best players not to work.
Because it goes back to the retiring at 31. Because it is a choice that you make. The whole of the GAA is a choice, of course. Every bit of it.
Yeah.
But
so
players,
you players, can walk away.
Yeah, and players becoming teachers to play Gaelic.
Choosing a career
even
to
though,
help out there.
Yeah.
I'm not facetiously going to call it a hobby, but you know what I mean.
What parent would let their child play rugby after seeing the Carnage Atonement? Is the headline on Owen Doyle's column in the Irish.
That's a picture of Ty Burns' distinctive blue falling off his head.
Exploding, you'd say.
Yeah.
What was it about the Munster Ulster game that...
There's so many injuries.
Well, and I think Ollie Yeager's situation is probably the biggest one as well. For me, anyway, has obviously had a really unfortunate track record with concussion, and the latest one at the weekend. I know, speaking to a few people in Munster, some people are worried about him specifically and just how many injuries he has picked up of that nature. I know some people probably thought he was kind of done after the last one or would take a break. Came back, did very well to get back into the team, and he's picked up another concussion. It's like... And obviously, along with the other injuries, Tom Farrell had what looks to be a bad shoulder injury. Ulster's injury list is obviously extensive as it is. Picked up three more at the weekend.
Are you worried about the concussions you got, Dara? You're a club player. You started as a teenager, is that right?
No, I would have started early 20s, like 20, 21 in college.
So what age were you?
I would have been like 21, yeah.
Okay, so you didn't learn how to tackle as a child. You didn't play mini rugby and all that stuff.
No, yeah. So I would have watched rugby for as long as I remember. But yeah, I didn't play for a local club or anything like that. My school was very much GA school. So yeah, no, I didn't learn techniques from an early age.
And how many concussions have you had?
It's a weird one where I've never gone to a doctor to get diagnosed, but you can, you know, you can tell when you're concussed and when you're not feeling right a week or two after. Two or three, yeah. I've got, I think, ones I felt for like days and maybe a week after, and then maybe three, like, because there's different grades of them as well, I suppose. But I wouldn't say I'm worried. I haven't put that much thought into it. It's hard to know. Like, so I've only been playing a few years, but it is a concerning thought of like when you learn about what a concussion is. It's kind of like a taboo topic in any sport, but particularly rugby, and people make jokes about it. And you know, there's such a big culture after games in rugby of going for a drink after, and you know, someone might joke, "Oh, but sure, you took a knock to the head there today," and then people laugh about it. But it's like another, you know, these precautions are there for a reason. And I would worry I know some people have gone through or have suffered a good few concussions where you would be concerned about the time that they're not giving and then coming back and playing again. You're like, very, very serious. Like, there's obviously that story the Times had from New Zealand there this week.
Sunday, yeah.
Yeah, and like,
Dennis Walsh.
You see stuff like that and you would be slightly concerned. Obviously, I'm not playing anywhere near that level or anything like that, but you know, it's the same difference really when you're taking hits to the head, because like you say, people at that level don't have the same technique as pro players, and that's almost just as dangerous as a top level.
Iriola and Alonso on the shortlist with Chelsea jobs, the headline of Matt Law's piece carried in the Irish Independent today. McCabe linked with City move. Apparently Beth Mead and Katie McCabe might both end up at Manchester City next season. Leinster draft in Byrne amid Porter fears. So Ed Byrne has been registered as emergency cover for the Champions Cup. We kind of obviously knew he was about the building and has played for Leinster again recently since his loan move from Cardiff. FA claims no proof that heading causes brain damage. That's the Telegraph lead story, and they also have Benjamin Sesko jumping out of a bin in celebration of his goal again last night. And Joshua Fury, Gareth A. Davis, the fight that we wanted a decade ago and we were all interested. It's a little bit like the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, which we're going to get again, I think, aren't we? We're getting that again. They're going to make a lot of money off that in their 50s. A sister act. A sister, all one word. You like it? You like that? You're smiling. Brilliant Bruno closes in on Prem landmark. Prem. Blues want boss, Iriola.
What's wrong with that?
Prem. Simeone, a pain in the grass. Arsenal are braced for another pitch battle at Atletico Madrid. So they're not cutting the grass. That'll suit Arsenal.
Like Celtic Park there, yeah. Friday night for Derry City.
Why are they worried?
I can't wait for the game tonight though.
Simeone, a pain in the grass.
Bayern PSG.
Yeah.
Bayern PSG. I'm going to the second leg of that.
Class.
I'm going to the second leg.
Where's the second leg, Paris or Munich?
Ooh. Munich, second leg, Munich. First leg's Paris tonight.
Oh, brilliant. Paris tonight.
So next week won't be here. Be at that. Reds revisited. Man United closing in on Champions League return and huge blow for Cork as Joyce's season is over. You're taking this very well. I'd be like in the pall of depression. Just when we have a nice thing.
What's that going to solve?
Dave Brailsford out. Totally.
You've been championing that from day one of your job here.
Sir Dave Brailsford has launched yet another mission after a brief but difficult spell at Manchester United with the objective of delivering an eighth Tour de France victory for Ineos Grenadiers.
Yeah, things are looking up for Ineos all of a sudden in the cycling world. They went through a really, really tough patch after 2019 Tour de France. The Egan Bernal won it, and then since then they were on a downward spiral, but they brought in some decent riders, some good one day riders as well, and they've performed pretty well this season. So
that's good.
They're not going to win Tour de France, but you know.
Carl Dillon pointing out, lads, these wins under Carrick are not reflecting performances and chances created.
Yeah, that's, well, I don't know about the chances. I think they are creating chances, but I agree about the performance aspect of it. Yeah.
So they lost the XG against Chelsea. They lost the XG against.
When Igor Thiago starts converting those chances, and when Chelsea get a point at Stamford Bridge, it all adds up. And then you're like, well, actually, do you know what? This is only going okay. But because he's getting the results, it doesn't actually matter. Like, the rest of it's just conversation.
Yeah, I wonder, does it matter to the people making the decision?
I think the options are very limited about who suits United outside of Carrick. Yeah. You went through the bookies' favourites. None of them are like, jump out for me at all. It's not that inspiring. That's why I'm going back to a guy whose peak was 8 years ago. You know what I mean? That's probably, outside of Luis Enrique, like, that's probably where I go next.
Give it to Jose.
God, again. He didn't even move to Manchester. He lived in a hotel. In a suite. And we have James Tracy standing by there.
He lived in the hotel. It was Jose style. I'd say Jose never lives anywhere, really. Apart from that one house, the massive house.
Oh, he does. He must, for tax reasons, he has to have a gaff, doesn't he?
Be non-domiciled.
He's back in Portugal.
He's got good advisors.
Last time. Oh, maybe he had a great time in the hotel, but I suppose the idea was he was always passing through, you know? He was always passing through. I tell you, he was passing through. James Tracy, he's in the production box right there. I did, we did have a conversation post-show yesterday about the URC. I don't want to go into a big one here, but maybe it's something that we can set up a bit, is that I really want to get into the URC and really enjoy it as a league, because I think it could be very good. I always get the impression that it's just used as, I wouldn't say a glorified training session by any means, but it's used to either get star players up to scratch or to try out other squad players. And I just wonder if you flipped the mentality of it, if you treated it as the priority, how much better the URC would be. I get excited every Friday afternoon about the URC coming up, especially when there's an Interpro, especially. Mm-hmm. And look, okay, the Ulster thing was out of their hands this week in terms of the injury.
Bit of a different situation, really exciting. Yeah.
But even the Leinster game away to Benetton, I was like, I'd love to see them going as strong as possible. They still went quite strong because it is a strong squad, but I would just love to see it. But really, when you're thinking about the Benetton game, it's all in preparation for the Toulon match. I just wonder, could the mentality be changed around the URC to make it more prominent to have the strongest teams playing as much as possible? You're going to come back with me a caveat, and a lot of them are fair enough. First of all, it's massively improved the URC compared to what it was, and in rugby it's very difficult to play your strongest team the whole time.
Good impression of me there.
Oh, I love that's another thing I must do. Okay,
it's a conversation we'll have for sure. Yeah, it's an interesting one.
Football on Off the Ball.
Yeah, I think we needed a big statement home win like that, and I think it was convincing to go. It's never happened in my whole career that I've conceded after 8 seconds. I can't believe we conceded after 8 seconds.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.